voltage on that capacitor must be decreasing by the rate that's called 1/2 CV squared, that's I equals C to V dt. In other words, if I know the current that's flowing, and I know that the amount of farads I've got, the rate of change of voltage to V dt equals I over C. Inductor, the current that I'm drawing, divided by the capacitance that I've got, tells me the rate of change and the number of volts per second or volts per microsecond the capacitor has to be discharging. So if my source of energy is a capacitor, I can't get that energy out of the capacitor without a voltage change on the capacitor, is my belief. Over to you, Wes.
And KC2QIQ with a comment on this?
Go ahead, Glenn.
One thing I don't hear being discussed is you're talking about energy in a capacitor that when it's in a steady state, it has one level of energy. Just the fact of discharging the capacitor is energy being used just to discharge it. Never mind what the second state of energy is. So, I mean, there's going to be some kind of resistance no matter what you do, no matter how minute it is, where to move the energy from one storage unit of one capacitor into, let's say, another capacitor, another inductor, or whatever, there's going to be energy lost just from the mere fact that you've transferred the energy, never mind what the final equilibrium is at the end, which will probably be something close to like 1/2 of that total energy. Back to you, Dick. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Glenn, we don't have a problem with that. What we're trying to establish is that a steady state of the capacitating device or capacity storing device is still of one having energy in it. If the unloading takes very short period of time.
Now, I'm going to agree with Glenn on this one. I've got my 1 farad capacitor. I charged it up to 1 volt. If I discharge it slowly by, let me pick a number, a 1,000-ohm resistor, where the internal resistance of the capacitor is millions of times smaller than my load resistor, in that experiment, I can get 99.99% of the energy out of that capacitor without loss in the capacitor. But if now I try to discharge that capacitor in a microsecond by putting a dead short circuit across it, the total energy I'm going to get out is going to be a much smaller number because of internal losses. The best example I know of this is the classic test where you've got a pair of 1 microfarad capacitors, for instance. I charge one of them up to 10 volts. The other one is uncharged. And I connect the two together.
The energy's half when you're done.
That's exactly right. I come down to half voltage. I started off with 10 volts on one and 0 volts on the other. And I put them across each other, and I end up with 5 volts. And by the equation of 1/2 CV squared, I've got twice the capacitance, but I got half the voltage, and I go through the formula, I've only got half the energy left. And the student in that example is usually asked, where did it go? And there's 2 places where it went. The internal resistance of the capacitors ate it up, and or at the instant you connected the two together. If the capacitors were perfect, in theory, the current flowing between the two was infinity in amperes. So you radiated one hell of a strong electromagnetic field into space, and that energy, if you managed to make the capacitors perfect so they had zero resistance, and the lead wires between the two had zero resistance, you would still lose exactly half the energy, but it's now radiated into space. Was that example given to you in college, and was that the explanation that was given also, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2LIW?
Yeah, absolutely, but there's also a mathematical way of looking at it, too, that where if you look at, like, an RC time constant, and you can draw the charging current into a capacitor and draw the area underneath it and integrate it. And then you can basically take the same discharge current curve and integrate its area underneath it. And the thing is that when you overlap the two over the same time frame, there's one thing very, very interesting that you notice. Half that area is missing. Where does it go? That's always a very good question. It's very easy to explain in the resistor with the high resistance and the current running through it. But when you reach the point of discontinuity, where all your resistances are zero, it raises a very interesting question. Where did that energy go? It's very hard to explain. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
I'm going to restate what you just said, Glenn. I'm going to agree with you. If I'm using simple analog circuits, no matter how I charge the capacitor with a simple analog circuit, I can only put half the energy into the capacitor that I consume in the charging process. If I consume 2 joules of energy in the charging process with a simple analog RC network, I'm only going to get 1 joule into the capacitor. There's a catch, though. If I'm willing to use a switching regulator, and if I'm willing to change pulse width modulation during the charge cycle, if I'm really careful, I can approach closer to 100% efficiency rather than 50% efficiency. Wonder if you agree with that one, Glenn. K2RIW.
No, I don't, because what's interesting about duty cycle and RMS, here again, it becomes an interesting problem between peak and RMS values. When you calculate RMS values of square waves and you look at what actually is the duty cycle, the voltage is the square of the duty cycle. So even if you vary the duty cycle and you go through, it winds up to be the same thing. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Okay, let me go to the next step. Let's assume that I intend to charge the capacitor in a more efficient manner. And here's the way I choose to do it. I don't just take my battery with some kind of a series resistor and connect it across the capacitor. That's going to give me 50% efficiency. I can temporarily connect the battery across an inductor and watch the current rise in the inductor as the inductor magnetic field increases. And then at some instant of time, I disconnect the battery and I connect the inductor to the capacitor. And I let the inductor discharge its current into the capacitor, and I very carefully choose the instant at which I disconnect the inductor from the capacitor. On that one charge cycle that I just described, tell me what efficiency you believe I can achieve, assuming I've got a good inductor and a good capacitor and a good battery. Over to you, Glenn.
Well, here again, energy in motion. Every time a capacitor is charged or discharged, half of that energy, total energy at the end, is going to be lost. You can't recover it again. I mean, I don't know of any technique you could possibly use. You can use inductors, you can use capacitors, but if you take the RMS values of all of those things at the end, it's still going to be one half.
Dick, what can you say about pulse density modulation, PDM?
Now, let's stay on this one for a minute. I've got a 1 Henry inductor. 1/2 LI squared. I allow the current to rise. I put the battery across the inductor. The inductor has very small internal resistance because I've made a good one. And I've disconnected the battery at the instant the current hits 1 ampere. 1 ampere, 1 Henry. I've got 1 joule in that inductor. I now instantaneously disconnect the battery, connect the inductor to the capacitor. The inductor will put its charge into the capacitor, and the right amount of time downrange, there will be 1 joule of energy into the capacitor and essentially 0 joule on the inductor. Another way of looking at it, Glenn, assuming I've got a rather high QLC network and you know that the energy jumps back and forth between the inductor and the capacitor on each half cycle of that sine wave between the two. I know also that if I choose the right LC network with the right, small enough internal resistances, that thing could have a ring down time of 10 minutes. But on each one of those cycles, essentially all of the energy goes out of the capacitor into the inductor. On the next half cycle, all of the energy goes out of the inductor into the capacitor. Because it's got a ring down time of 10 minutes, but I've only looked at one cycle, I have completely charged and discharged that capacitor on each half cycle, and I've done it essentially losslessly, or the loss is very slow, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten a 10-minute ring down time. So when I'm using an inductor to charge or discharge a capacitor, and if I'm smart enough, I think I can approach nearly 100% efficiency. I know you're going to disagree with this one. KC2QIQ, we'll talk about it. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, of course I'm going to. I think by this time you'd realize it's a given. No, but seriously, if you have that that energy right now that's moving from the inductor, in other words, you have the battery feeding it like an L network. So you've got the series L and the shunt C and a battery. Now what's happening is you basically have the current established in the inductor. You disconnect the battery. Now you're putting the basically what you're saying is you're putting the inductor in parallel with the capacitor. So during that time, the capacitor will basically receive current from the inductor into the capacitor to a peak RMS value, at which time, if you don't disconnect the capacitor, it'll start discharging. So what do you wind up with at the end? One half the energy, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
I'm connecting and disconnecting very intelligently here, or maybe I'm using a diode. In fact, I could put a diode between the two.
It doesn't matter.
Righty? I can put 1 joule of energy into the inductor.
Disconnect it.
When I connect it to the capacitor, I can get most of that 1 joule of energy into the capacitor.
We have, because otherwise we'll start discharging it.
Not if I've got a diode between the two. One half of that joule, that whole joule, almost all of that 1 joule of energy that was in the inductor will now be in the capacitor, and because of the diode, all action stops. I can get most of that joule from the inductor into the capacitor.
Lost on the diode, trust me.
Assuming it's a good diode, I'm not going to lose very much. I can get 95% of the energy into the capacitor. Do you agree or disagree?
Completely disagree.
You think I'm going to lose a half a joule on each half cycle. If that's true, how in the world can that circuit as an LC network give me one cycle per second, but it's got a 10-minute ring down time? How in the world can you do that if each half cycle is only 50% efficient?
You're describing the buck regulator. That's exactly how it works. In other words, you have to put the energy into the inductor in one stroke, and then you have the freewheeling rectifier that runs it on the second stroke. And what basically is happening is you can only do it for a certain duty cycle before the flux ramps back down again. So you only have a peak area which you can transfer that energy. And that's just, energy storage equations. I do them all the time, Dick. Believe me, you can't get, there's no way you're going to wind up with 100% energy transfer between two storage devices like an inductor and a capacitor. It can't happen.
I didn't give the accurate explanation for it. I still don't understand why Dick is not right in it.
Now, I'm going to challenge you on this one, Glenn. Step number one, Glenn, have you ever seen an LC network which, when you watch the ring down, rings down for, let me pick a number, 1,000 cycles. Have you ever seen an LC network that has a significant number of cycles of ring down time? Have you ever seen that waveform on an oscilloscope? Over to you, Glenn.
I have.
Is the energy going completely from the capacitor to the inductor and from the inductor back to the capacitor on each half cycle of that ring down time? If it rings down for 1,000 cycles, and I'm only studying the first cycle, if the first cycle uses half of its energy on each half cycle, how the hell would it ring down in 1,000 cycles as opposed to 3? Over to you, Glenn.
The energy is basically moving across the spectrum. When you look at the spectrum of the energy in that series as it's ringing down, yes, you're losing one half. But it's not over each per cycle. You're not losing it per cycle. You're losing it from the total initial energy to the final energy. So it's not in each cycle that you're losing it. It's from the energy put in to the final energy. So you can have a lot of perturbations in between the initial energy in till the final stored. In other words, you have an initial state that's basically a potential state. Then you have an active state or a kinetic state in between, and then a final resting state or a final equilibrium. From the beginning to the end, the loss is one half. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Okay. The only problem that we have is that we're not dealing with the spectrum, Glenn.
Hold on, fellas. Something's wrong here. I'm going to agree with something that you indirectly said. I've got a ring down circuit, and if I wait till it rings down, all of the energy is lost at the end of the ring down. I'm going to give you that. You and I can design a circuit which has a high enough Q that it doesn't ring down to half cycle half energy until 1,000 cycles have occurred. You and I can design a circuit like that. That brings down to half energy and 1,000 cycles. Let's talk about the very first cycle of the 1,000. If I look at the magnitude of the first sine wave, and I compare it to the magnitude of the second sine wave in something that takes 1,000 cycles to ring down to half energy. From the first cycle to the second cycle, isn't it possible that those two first sine waves, that the second sine wave is 98% of the amplitude of the first sine wave? Haven't you ever seen a waveform like that, Glenn? Over to you, Glenn.
Yeah, absolutely, Dick. And I'm very familiar with the waveform, and I know exactly where you're going. What you're basically going to say is that then you interrupt the circuit at that point for recovery. But the issue is that every time you make an interruption, you're changing the physical circuit, and the circulation currents are changed, at which time now you have a secondary model. But if you keep with the original model, then because initially you have to have a start-off point where the energy started, and then you're going to have your final equilibrium. And what I'm saying is that in between, so that finally all of that works out, eventually it's going to be one half. Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so let me let you finish, but yes, I have seen that waveform.
Okay, what happened? You just jumped 5 steps ahead. I don't want to jump 5 steps ahead. Go slow here, Glenn. Between the first cycle of that sine wave and the second cycle, is it possible for the second cycle to be 98% of the magnitude of the first cycle? Give me a simple yes or no. Have you seen that? Do you believe that can happen?
Yes, it can. And it can be integrated in ways of even probably higher percentages than that, K2RIW, K22QIQ.
If the second sine wave is 98% of the amplitude of the first sine wave, and the only way you can make a sine wave when you've got a parallel LC network is that at the instant the voltage goes through zero across that LC in parallel, there's really 0 volts there as it goes through zero on that sine wave. At that instant of time, there is no energy in the capacitor. Every bit of the energy is in the inductor, all of the current that's flowing in the inductor. Correspondingly, if I wait a quarter of a cycle later, when I go to peak voltage, at peak voltage, the slight slope has gone to zero, the current through the inductor has gone to zero, all the energy is in the capacitor. So the energy is flipping back and forth between inductor and capacitor with nearly 100% efficiency on each quarter cycle. Do you agree or disagree?
In that time division, that's absolutely correct.
If I can dump all of the energy out of the capacitor into the inductor in one quarter cycle, and if in the next quarter cycle I can dump all of the energy per se out of the inductor into the capacitor, where's this 50% jazz you've been telling me about?
Because, well, what's actually happening is you have to look at all of the time and the difference in the waveform. Like, there's things that we've talked about before. There's power factor. There's angle, voltage, and current. And what are the phasors? When you look at the voltage and the current, they're not in phase at that point. And the energy, so you have to allow a, in other words, if you start a energy transfer from T equals zero to some final point of where everything's in equilibrium, there's going to be a point in time where voltage and current can be in different phases so that the amount of absorbed energy hasn't taken place at that point in time yet. But eventually, it will catch up. So you're not really getting effectively the amount of energy transfer. So yes, you haven't had the losses at that point, but you haven't had the energy transfer as well either.
I believe everything got mixed up right now, because at first you mentioned, Glenn, about the spectrum. There is no spectrum, and the losses of the spectrum, and there is no losses of the spectrum. Now you're referring to the phase difference. Could you put it a little bit more clear?
I have a basic question.
Both of you guys are jumping into another subject. Please don't do that. I've had Glenn admit that as the voltage of this LC network goes through zero, let me reset. As the voltage of the sine wave, this damped sine wave, it's going to go for 1,000 cycles, and I'm only looking at cycle number one. As the voltage goes through zero, no energy is in that capacitor. All the energy is in the inductor by way of the current stored in that inductor in its magnetic field. a quarter of a cycle later, all of the joules of the inductor, 98% of them per se, have gone into the capacitor, are now at maximum voltage. If I open up the switch between the L and the C at that instant, all of the energy stays in the capacitor. There was no energy in the inductor. Nothing happens. I open the switch and everything is inert. In that quarter cycle, I have taken all of the energy of the inductor, I dumped it into the capacitor with 98% efficiency, I opened up the switch. Up till now, Glenn, you told me I can't do it. I just did it with 98% efficiency. I challenge you to say that that didn't happen. Over to you, Glenn.
It didn't happen, Dick, because what you have to realize is that in a ring-down circuit, the impedance, in other words, of the L and the C at each part of that cycle is varying. It's moving up and down. When something's in the final state, at the final resting point, where you have a static voltage and capacitor, the amount of charge and energy stored at that point in time is defined. But when you have a moment or a moving voltage or a moving current at a point in time, you have to look at each vector individually. To say that all of the voltage and the currents and all of the energy has transferred within a quarter of cycle, I completely disagree, because the energy hasn't transferred. Because if the energy had transferred within a quarter cycle, there would have been no additional ringing afterwards. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
There would be no ringing afterwards when I opened the switch. I didn't tell you how I got the energy of one joule into the inductor.
Are you missing what I'm saying, Dick?
When it swung through 0 volts, when this thing is ringing down, and it's going to ring for 1,000 cycles, and I'm only looking at the first cycle.
In the first cycle, if you open the switch, the voltage is no longer going to stay at that peak.
Okay. If as the voltage goes from 0 volts to maximum voltage, the slope has gone to 0. Since the slope has gone to 0, there is no current flowing out of the inductor. There is no energy in the inductor. All the energy has gone from the inductor to the capacitor. I open the switch. The voltage stays on the capacitor. There was no current in the inductor. The inductor doesn't give me any inductive flyback.
I disagree, Dick. I have two other components here to tell you how that's taking place.
You're telling me I can't open the switch at the instant of... You're telling me I can't open the voltage at peak voltage. Why can't I do that?
When you're seeing something ringing, there's something more complex to that waveform than what you're seeing. That capacitor's got ESL and ESR to it. So when that inductor is moving and you're seeing that ring, so that you're seeing a high voltage, you're assuming at that point in time that the inductor no longer has any energy in it, and all of that energy is on the capacitor. If you open the switch at that point, the ESL and ESR of that capacitor will collapse, and the true energy stored in that capacitor is nowhere near where you think it is.
If the equivalent series resistance of the inductor and the capacitor is small enough that it's capable of ringing down to half magnitude in 1,000 cycles, and I'm only studying the very first cycle, I say that the ESR is insignificant during that one cycle of time. I think you disagree with that.
I would suggest if you had a real inductor that had no ESR in it, and a capacitor that had no ESR and no ESL in it, I think what you'd find out is that you wouldn't have a ring.
Okay. What's the magnitude of resistance, series, equivalent series resistance, required for a capacitor that's going to ring down to half energy in 1,000 cycles? You can tell me how many ohms that is.
I think I'm getting a little off course here with you on this. In other words, my initial statement was that in the beginning, you had a situation where there was energy in the beginning, and then there's before the energy started to move. Then we had a point at the end where it was final. We agree that the energy is halfway in between. Now we're breaking it down into integrals, and we're looking at small slices of what's going on during this time where the energy is in a capacitor or the inductor at different points along this integrated transfer of energy. And we're going to take a slice, and now we're mentioning the ESR and ESL components. But I'm saying I don't think this is that simple a thing to just, I mean, I know I'd have to sit down and calculate all this out to actually even come down with actually time moments and then figure out where, what all the energy would be on different components over time. But I know it can be done, Dick.
In 1,000 cycles, this LC network that you and I could build, it's not theoretical, you and I could build a circuit that rings down in 1,000 cycles to half energy, to half magnitude. And you're telling me I can't talk about the very first cycle. Why can't I talk about the first cycle? If I chose to look at the first cycle, at the instant the voltage on this parallel LC network is going through zero, you agree or disagree that there's no energy on the capacitor, and essentially all the energy of this 1,000 cycle ring down circuit, at that instant the voltage goes through zero on the very first cycle, I say all the energy at that instant is in the inductor and no energy is in the capacitor. You either agree or disagree with that?
I would disagree with that.
If there's zero voltage on the capacitor, how much energy is in the capacitor?
0 volts with respect to where? In other words, you're hitting me with, like, very, very strange things now. In other words, is this now a parallel circuit?
I've been continuously talking about a parallel LC network. An inductor and a capacitor in parallel with each other. And there's going to be a sine wave because I've charged the thing up, and I'm going to watch this ring down for 1,000 cycles. But
okay, let me answer your question now.
At the instant that on the very first cycle it swings through 0 volts, how much energy is inside of that capacitor when there's 0 volts across its leads, and assume its leads are very low in inductance in this particular network?
The theoretical numerical value of a parallel LC tank at 0 volts, at that moment of time, the energy is zero. But as we all know, it's not. But that numerically, just for that, if you go T minus of that or T plus of that, that's not the case. But exactly at zero, it would be zero.
Whoa. When it swings through zero, is there a slope to the voltage coming out of that capacitor as it swings through zero? Does it have a slope, a dV/dt, yes or no?
It definitely sure does. And the energy is both in the inductor and the capacitor at that period of time as it goes through. And you can actually draw the vector around that. So in other words, if you integrate to either side, you can determine what the energy is in both elements.
Glenn, you're jumping too many steps ahead. Go slower. Go slower. At the instant the voltage goes through zero, it's doing it with a finite slope. At the instant it goes through zero, there's 0 volts on the capacitor. There is zero energy in the capacitor because you evaluate a capacitor of energy, 1/2 CV squared, and V is zero. 0 volts on the capacitor, zero energy on the capacitor. But since there is a finite slope, you can only get a slope, a dV/dt on a capacitor, if current is flowing. The current is coming from the inductor. If there's current on the inductor, 1/2 Li squared, there is energy in that inductor. You agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Okay. How can you get the dV/dt on the capacitor without current flowing into the capacitor? Over to you.
dV/dt is assuming that there's time, so that we're not talking about zero anymore. I'm talking about one point. So in one point is the only place where this capacitor is at zero. But there's an interesting thing. If I know that the capacitor is at zero, I know its calculable impedance at that discontinuity, which would also mean that I know what the impedance of my inductor is at that point, which is also telling me that there's no current flow in it as well. So at that theoretical moment zero, there's no current in the inductor, no current in the capacitor, and no voltage. So theoretically, at that point zero, there's no energy in either element. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Will you admit that that LC network in parallel is making a pure sine wave? Will you admit that that pure sine wave has a rather simple equation that you and I could write, yes or no?
Absolutely, and then we've got to bring time back into it again, but go ahead.
Don't jump too many steps. I could say that the voltage on that parallel network is V sub zero sine omega t. And this is before I add the damping factor. Because it's going to damp down in 1,000 cycles, and I'm only looking for 98% efficiency, accuracy, I can, for that first couple of cycles, I can use a very simple formula, V0 sine omega t. You agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree.
Can I differentiate V0 sine omega t?
Yes, you can.
Can I differentiate it at the time that the theta is going through zero? The argument of the sine is going through zero. Doesn't it have a calculatable, finite slope at that instant of zero? Isn't that a real slope? It happens to be a certain magnitude, cosine omega t. And there's an omega t out front, but it's got a finite calculatable slope, even though it's going through zero.
Yes, it does, but keep in mind, that voltage at that point is not only on the inductor, it's also on the capacitor, it's also on the inductor. And at that point, I also know the impedance of the inductor as well.
Be careful now. When you talk about the impedance of a capacitor or the impedance of an inductor, if your definition of impedance is how much capacitive reactance does it have, or how much inductive reactance it has, if you're not changing the magnitude of the capacitive reactance is not changing. Do you agree or disagree?
In average, yes.
I don't mean an average. Nanosecond per nanosecond, does it have the exact same capacitive reactance? Yes or no?
I'm really not sure. I got to think about this one.
After you think about it, I think there's a high probability you'll come to the conclusion that the capacitive reactance throughout the cycle does not change. You can't change capacitive reactance without changing farads, because the formula is 1 over 2 pi Fc. We're not changing F. We're not changing C. We're not changing 2 pi. That capacitive reactance is a fixed number, unchanging throughout the cycle. I know we normally don't discuss it that way, but I think that's the truth. Over to you.
I think I'm going to agree with you on this one, because I'm just thinking right now, omega T, if the time, in the time differential, I'm not sure. I can't give you definitively on that one.
Okay, I'm showing you where I'm going to go now. I know you're having trouble with 0 volts at a 0 instant of time. But by L'Hopital's rule and a whole lot of other things, I can talk about a finite slope. If I differentiate a sine function, I get a cosine function. I know it's got a finite slope as it goes through zero. Because it's got a finite slope, and because the capacitor has got the exact same capacitor reactance, I know the current that's flowing at that instant. There's only one source of current. It's coming from the inductor. Once I know the magnitude of that current, and again, because the capacitor reactance never changes, because the capacitor doesn't change, assuming I'm using an inductor that doesn't saturate, the inductor reactance never changes. The inductance magnitude in Henry never changes. Since I now have a finite slope as I go through zero, and I can calculate that slope can only happen I equals C dV dt, I know the dV dt, I know what the current must be, the current's coming from the inductor, I now know at that instant of time what amount of stored energy there is in the magnetic field of the inductor, 1/2 Li². I'm saying that as it goes through zero, all of the energy of the circuit at that instant is in the inductor, none of it's in the capacitor. A quarter of a cycle later, when the voltage hits a peak, and because the slope up there is zero, I know the current is zero. If the current is zero, there is no stored magnetic field left in that inductor at that instant. Because the voltage is now at the peak, all of the stored energy is in the capacitor. Within a quarter of a cycle, I've gone from all of the energy in the inductor and none of it in the capacitor. That's what happened when it went through zero. Quarter of a cycle later, all of the energy is in the capacitor, none of it's in the inductor, because the current went to zero. If you and I can accept each of those two states at those instants, and now you give me a switch that I open up at just the right instant of time, what I have...
repeater, timeout, cancel.
What I have just accomplished is that on that cycle, I have taken essentially all the energy out of the inductor and put it into the capacitor, essentially losslessly. It's got to be losslessly, otherwise it would never have run down for 1,000 cycles. each individual cycle is only losing a small percentage of 1% of the energy. I'm dumping all of the energy back and forth on each quarter cycle. I'm using this as an example that if I'm willing to use an inductor to charge a capacitor, I can do it nearly losslessly if I'm smart enough. Over to you, Glenn, K2RIW.
If I have 1/2 Li square and I have CV as my final product of my capacitor in that rate of time, and there's no ESR, no ESL, just the capacitor charging that, I will have 1/2 of the energy in the capacitor in that time frame.
If I'm losing half of the energy on each cycle, how in the world do I ring down in 1,000 cycles?
You have to break it down into each individual cycle. Keep in mind, if you had no ESR, no ESL, in other words, at that moment of time, you never would have had the long ring down. But add ESR, ESL back to the equation again, now the peak instant voltage will be very, very high, and now you'll have that additional reactance running down over longer cycles.
I think you said it backwards. If I ring down in 1,000 cycles, I've got an extremely small equivalent series resistance on both the capacitor and the inductor. If I allow the equivalent series resistance to become a big number, I don't ring down in 1,000 cycles, I ring down in 3 cycles. The fact that I'm ringing down in 1,000 cycles, and I've built circuits like that, I know it's real. I can make the equivalent series resistance very small by comparison to the capacitive reactant. It's a high Q capacitor. I can buy or build a high Q capacitor. On each quarter cycle, all the energy is bouncing back and forth between an inductor and the capacitor on each of those early cycles, and I'm going to have 1,000 of them. The energy loss per cycle is extremely small. I will eventually convince you that all of the energy goes from the inductor to the capacitor. The next quarter cycle, all the energy goes from the capacitor to the inductor almost losslessly. 98% of the energy is preserved. I know it's a different way of thinking. I believe this is real, Glenn. I've seen a number of circuits that use this. You don't have to lose half the energy in charging a capacitor if you're doing it with an inductor. If I do it with a resistor, you're absolutely right. I'm going to lose half my energy. That's not the right way to do it. I can charge a capacitor with an inductor if I'm smart enough in the way I set up the circuit. You and I are going to be discussing this for quite a bit of time to come, I can tell. There's a religion required here to accept this. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
I know when you... There's a difference between power and energy. And there's a time coefficient. In other words, if I were to charge in a RC output filter, and I were talking about power, yes, I agree with what you're saying. That yes, the power lost in the resistor over time... Okay, at that point in time, can be easily pointed out to the, you know, through a Thevenin equation, I can look at that. Then I put the inductor in, and I look at the power transfer, and I can say, okay, power in, power out. But in order for power to move from potential to kinetic state over time, in other words, in time intervals, 1/2 the energy is lost. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
If the ring down circuit is going to ring down for 1,000 cycles to get down to half amplitude, tell me how much energy is lost in that circuit in the first cycle. Over to you, Glenn.
Well, here again, it depends on how much of the energy left the inductor. In other words, when you look at first cycle, you've got to break it down and say, okay, into each moment of time, then break up that integral and say, okay, there's the impedance of the capacitor against the inductor. The inductor is starting to move. The voltage is rising. That's dropping, and then just cut it off at that one point, and then you know the instantaneous energy in the inductor and the instantaneous energy in the capacitor.
I'm going to say the question again. It's going to come down to half energy, half volume, half magnitude of voltage on an oscilloscope after 1,000 cycles. But I'm only looking at the very first cycle of the 1,000 cycles. Give me a rough approximation. What percentage of the energy in the network was dissipated during the first cycle of the 1,000 cycles? Give me a rough guess a wag on that one, Glenn.
Hey, I don't know, Dick. It's late for me right now. I would have to draw it out and really think about it. But right now, you know, I'm not sure. I'm sure you've got an idea. Run it by me.
If it's going to ring down to half magnitude in 1,000 cycles, that's 50%. If I take 1,000th of that, isn't it something like 0.05%? An extremely small percentage of energy is lost on the first cycle. If that wasn't true, I would never get 1,000 cycles. If I'm going to get 1,000 cycles out of this thing, the energy lost on that first cycle has got to be an extremely small number. Do you agree or disagree?
1,000th of the percent.
No, I definitely agree that the amount of energy lost in there, but I don't believe that, well, I'm not going to say believe, so let me get this, that word out of here. What's happening there is that in that initial part of that ring down, yes, a very small amount of energy has been lost, but just as much as there's just a little amount of energy that's been lost, just as little amount of energy has been transferred.
Okay, you admit the first cycle is losing very little energy. How much energy is in the capacitor at the instant the voltage goes through zero, with a slope? At the instant it goes through zero, how much energy is in the capacitor? Give me a rough guess.
I think we're going in circles here again, but as I said before, when you're at the instantaneous zero, the energy is zero.
I'm asking how much energy is in the capacitor, and you said zero. How much energy is in the inductor? Bear in mind that an ampere of current is flowing from the inductor into the capacitor. If that wasn't true, you wouldn't have the slope of the voltage on the capacitor as it goes through zero. I equals C to V dt. That slope is telling you change of voltage versus time.
I disagree.
How do you get the voltage to change across the capacitor without current flowing into the capacitor?
If the voltage on the capacitor is going through zero, that means it's in a plus vector. It has to go through zero and then go minus, which also means that the current must be doing the same. If the current is starting off in one vector with a positive voltage, if it's going to go negative, the current again must go through a reversal. And at that point in time, the voltage is zero, the current is zero.
Negatory. Assume now I'm going through zero in the positive going voltage. In other words, T minus at T minus zero time, I was at a negative voltage heading toward zero. At T equals zero, I'm at 0 volts. At T equals zero plus, I've got a positive voltage. I've gone from a negative, slightly negative voltage through zero to a positive voltage. When I go 1 nanosecond to the left, zero, and 1 nanosecond to the right, I've kept a constant slope. A constant slope, I equals C dV dt, requires a constant current. Yes or no?
It sure does, and I'm glad you said that. Because, and now, what is the voltage? What is the voltage and current phasor at zero?
It's got a constant slope. It went from slightly negative through zero to slightly positive during this instant of time of the positive going slope. I could easily have 1 ampere of current flowing in order to make that rate of change on the capacitor. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, I disagree.
How do I get a voltage changing on the capacitor, not violating the formula I equals C dV dt? I've got a real dV dt, a constant slope at that instant of time. If the voltage is a sine wave and I take the differential of the sine wave, I get cosine wave. It is a cosine in magnitude. I've got a constant slope going through zero. Isn't that a nearly constant current during those couple of nanoseconds of time?
Actually, it is, but there's a phase difference between the voltage and the current at that point.
You're jumping too many steps ahead. You're admitting now that there is a constant current flowing, and it could be 1 ampere. I'm going through 0 volts, therefore there's essentially zero energy in the capacitor. But 1 ampere is current is flowing from the inductor. If at that instant of time, I calculate the energy in the inductor, it does or doesn't violate 1/2 LI squared. Can I use 1/2 LI squared with 1 ampere of flowing, and if it's a 1 Henry inductor, I've got 1 joule of energy in the inductor at the instant of time, obvious by the fact that the current is flowing into the capacitor, and I know the magnitude of the current that's creating that slope. Don't I have energy in that inductor creating that 1 ampere at that time. Over to you, Glenn.
Oh, you don't. And I think if you think about it, you'll know why.
Is an ampere flowing? Yes or no?
Yes, it is.
Is the ampere coming from the inductor? Yes or no?
Yes, it is.
Can I calculate energy in the inductor by 1/2 Li squared? Yes or no?
Yes, you can.
Is there a possibility of a joule of energy in the inductor at that instant?
No, there's not.
1/2 Li squared is true or lie? Yes or no?
1/2 Li squared is an average. It's not an instantaneous equation for energy and voltage. If you use your equation 1/2 Li squared in that particular moment of time, what is the voltage in 1/2 Li squared across the inductor?
Let's back up. Did you agree that there is zero energy in the capacitor at the instant the voltage swings through zero? Yes or no?
Yes, I do, and I'm also saying that there's zero energy in the inductor at that point as well.
You're jumping too many steps ahead. You're admitting I have zero energy in the capacitor when it swings through zero. Later on, when there's real voltage on the capacitor, is there energy in the capacitor? Yes or no?
Yes, there is, and there's also energy in the inductor as well.
If I can have the energy go from zero to something much more than zero in the capacitor, and I can talk about the energy at each instant of time, at the 0-degree angle, at the 10-degree angle, at the 90-degree angle, I can talk about the energy in the capacitor at each one of those angles of the sine wave. You agree or disagree?
I agree.
If I can do that on an inductor, tell me why I can't do that if I can do it on a capacitor, tell me why I can't also do that on an inductor. Is there something magic about the inductor where I can't talk about the energy at each instant of the sine wave?
Yes, you can, but you have to keep in mind that there's not only, you have to look at the voltage and the current. In other words, what you were saying before is that all the voltage was on the capacitor and that there was no energy in the inductor, and when you had all the energy in the inductor, that there was no voltage on the capacitor. And what I'm pointing out to you is that that's really not the case. What's actually happening is that the vector and the phase difference between voltage and current, as you go up and down, if you draw that sine wave in terms of voltage, and you draw the energy characteristic for the capacitor and the inductor, both are moving up together, not apart.
If I now make a simple XY graph, and I plot the voltage across this parallel network, I can show that voltage as a pure sine wave. If on the exact same graph in another color, I plot the current, will the current be 90 degrees out of phase from the voltage? Yes or no?
Yes, it will.
If the 90 degrees out of phase of voltage and current, if I now look at the instant where the voltage goes through zero, is the current at a maximum? Yes or no?
Yes, it is.
If the current is at a maximum, is that representing energy stored in the inductor at an instant of time? If I know the current flowing through the inductor, from the inductor, I know the current flowing through the circuit. If I know the current flowing through all of that, every one of those turns of the inductor has the exact same current, if it's a reasonable design of inductor. If I know the current flowing through the inductor, and it's 1 ampere, and it happens to be a 1 Henry inductor, is not 1 joule of magnetic energy present in that inductor at that instant? Yes or no?
At that instant, the answer is no. I think what you're confusing is two different things here. You're looking at power. In other words, you're trying to use the power equation versus energy at a moment. And what the two definitely don't equate. When you have to look at, if you look at the voltage vector and the current vector at one point in time, when the voltage is at zero, the energy on the capacitor is zero, but the energy in the inductor is also zero.
If the energy in the inductor is zero and the energy in the capacitor is zero, but I'm in the middle of 1,000 cycles, where the hell is the energy going to come from for the rest of the 999 cycles?
It's just a moment in time. It's like saying on an AC waveform, if you're looking at power, is there power at the top of the sine wave as it goes to the bottom? Your power is zero at the bottom. Where's the power coming from? It's just basically being expressed over time.
You keep bringing in the word power. I strongly recommend we do not use the word power in this circuit yet. I'm discussing how much energy is where at each instant of time. I recommend we talk about only energy. I've got you to admit that the energy on the capacitor is zero at the instant the voltage going through zero. Half a quarter of a wave later, when the voltage hits peak on the whole network, that there's a significant amount of energy in the capacitor. I think I've gotten you to admit that so far. Is that true?
Yes, it is. But I'm also telling you that you have the same amount of energy at that point in time on the inductor as well.
At the instant the voltage goes to maximum, is the slope of the sine wave zero at that time? And if so, doesn't that mean that no current is flowing at that instant? Over to you.
At that point at 90 degrees, yes. The current at that point will be effectively zero. That's correct.
If there's zero current flowing, how much energy at 1/2 Li squared is in the inductor at that instant?
Exactly the same amount of energy that's inside the capacitor.
Okay. I think that somebody has convinced you that you can only talk about 1/2 Li squared in an RMS manner and you integrate it over a cycle. I think that person has led you astray. You can talk about the instantaneous energy in a capacitor at every one of the degrees of that sine wave. You can simultaneously talk about the amount of energy in the inductor at every one of those degrees of the sine wave.
LdVdt.
LdVdt? How are you using that?
LdVdt is how I'm determining the energy stored in an inductor. LdIdt is just the field energy for a current equation, like Ni, and it's just a different way of looking at it. But LdIdt, in other words, if I want to look at the current, if I want to ramp up flux intensity, it's LdIdt.
You believe that the energy in the inductor and the energy in the capacitor both are zero at the instant it goes through 0 volts.
In a reactive circuit in parallel, that's correct.
Is a ampere of current flowing at that instant, Glenn?
Yes, it is.
Where's the ampere coming from?
Just circulating current in that circuit. It's just one moment of time. It's they're being shared. Energy is being shared between the capacitor and the inductor.
Is the 1 ampere coming from the rate of collapse of the magnetic field in the inductor? Is that where the current is coming from? The rate of change of magnetic field in the inductor? Yes or no?
Yes, it is, and it's also being absorbed in the capacitor by the rate of charge buildup in the capacitor at the same time.
If the current of 1 ampere represents the rate of change of magnetic field, that means the magnetic field is descending. If it's descending, it's descending from some higher number. If it's a higher number than zero, then there is real energy in the inductor at that instant of time of 0 volts.
The magnitude of voltage at that point is zero, and the direction of charge in the capacitor is reversing, just on the other side. So at that point in time, the magnitude of energy in the inductor at 0 volts is zero.
Is the slope at 1 degree negative and zero and 1 degree positive of that sine wave, is the slope almost the exact same slope, a positive slope at all times?
Very much so.
Does a positive slope require a change in current direction? Can't the current direction be the same, 1 degree negative, zero, and 1 degree positive? Can't the current direction be the same?
Yeah, but what we're pointing out here is that at the moment of zero, the voltage of being at zero, the current is there. It is, the current has an amplitude vector, and it's at 90 degrees with respect to the voltage at zero. And I'm saying that zero at zero phase 90 in the inductor L at 0 volts is zero energy.
If both the inductor has zero energy and the capacitor has zero energy in your hypothesis, where does the energy come from to complete the next cycle? Who's pouring energy in there?
There's charge in the capacitor, or lack of charge at one point, and you have magnetic flux inside the inductor, and it has a vector and it has a direction. Just because its magnitude at one point happens to be zero doesn't mean that the slope in one direction isn't going to continue.
Is the 1 ampere flowing out of the inductor into the capacitor due to the rate of decrease of magnetic field, the rate of collapse of magnetic field? Is that where the current from the inductor is coming from at that instant of roughly 0 degrees? Go ahead.
You have to say that again. I'm sorry, I missed it.
The inductor is supplying 1 ampere into the capacitor. It has to be doing that, otherwise you wouldn't have a finite slope. The slope is a nice fixed number. The current is always flowing in the same direction at -1 degree, 0 degree, and +1 degree of the 0 to 360 degree phase angle. The current of 1 ampere in my example is coming from the rate of collapse of magnetic field in the inductor. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree.
If the rate of collapse of magnetic field is creating the 1 ampere, then there is a significant amount of magnetic field in order to be collapsing in order to make the 1 ampere. If there's a significant amount of magnetic field, then there is stored energy in the inductor at 0 degrees. Over to you.
I could make the same argument for the capacitor.
Since you rate energy in the capacitor as 1/2 CV², and if V is going through zero, how much energy is in the capacitor?
Yeah, but see, in the instance of time, energy in the inductor is LdIdt. 1/2 CV² is an average. It's like 1/2 CV² F is power. It's a long average. The integral for power in an inductor, or energy in the inductor, is LdIdt.
LdIdt equals voltage. The voltage is zero. I can still have a finite DIDT.
Granted, but your energy at zero magnitude is zero.
Is energy in an inductor at each instant of time 1/2 LI², yes or no?
No.
Then what is the energy? If I can use energy in a capacitor of 1/2 CV², and you accept that, why can't I use energy in an inductor of 1/2 LI²?
That's an anomaly that actually just works out that way, but I'm telling you right now that you can't, in this particular circuit, it works out that, yes, that's the energy in the capacitor. But what I'm pointing out to you is that in this parallel circuit, the energy in the capacitor and the energy in the inductor over voltage is directly proportional to voltage in both the inductor and the capacitor. That's how that particular circuit works, energy, that is.
But this anomaly creates 1,000 cycles at half of the amplitude.
If I wanted to rate the in joules of stored magnetic energy in your inductor, and I assume now that I've got the inductor connected to a series resistor into a power supply and everything is sitting still, I got 1 ampere of current flowing from my power supply through a resistor into the inductor. Steady state. I turned it on an hour ago, and 1 ampere is flowing, and it's a 1 Henry inductor. I say at that instant of time, for that whole hour, per se, there is a steady state 1 joule of energy, 1/2 LI², one ampere and 1 Henry is 1/2 a joule. Yes, there's 1/2 joule of energy in that inductor, continuously there for the first hour, for that whole hour. You agree or disagree?
I agree.
Can I, at each instant of time, if in the next second I turn down the power supply and I wait for everything to settle down and I've now got 0.5 ampere instead of 1 ampere, do I go down to 1/4 of the stored energy in joules in the inductor? Can I talk about the energy in the inductor once I know the current is flowing at that instant? Can I do that? Is it still obey the rule that joules of energy is 1/2 LI²? Over to you, Glenn.
For a number of cycles, yes.
I didn't say number of cycles. This is a steady state power supply, and I just suddenly turned down the power supply. I waited until everything settled down, and I want to reevaluate the amount of inductance, the amount of stored energy in that inductor. Does it still obey the equation 1/2 LI²?
No.
It did for the first hour. Why doesn't it do it for the second hour? What happened?
changed the rule on me. You said right now that what's the voltage across the inductor?
I didn't tell you the voltage across the inductor. I only told you the current. I've got a power supply.
Right, that's why I said the energy is zero.
Well, if I go to half the voltage out of the power supply through the exact same resistor, therefore the steady state current went to one half the current it was during the previous hour, don't I have one quarter?